You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
InPlay Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. InPlay Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the NFL podcast here with William Hill, week number 13 in the National Football League. Dave Kellner here in the studio in the UK with Gil Alexander live on the line stateside, the Beating the Book podcast host. I'm sure set for another weekend's action. First of all, a warm welcome, Gil. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm, I had no skin in the game, as we like to say here, in last night's NFL game, but I'm still recovering, even just as a fan.
Unbelievable match, or ending to the match last night, Gil, with Green Bay eventually prevailing. Aaron Rodgers connecting with Richard Rodgers on a 61-yard Hail Mary as time expired. It was just unbelievable. It was one of those not once in a lifetime moments, because we seem to see maybe one or two every 5 or 6 years in the National Football League. But the penalty before that play in that situation astounded me, Gil. I don't know what the coaches are doing, but they must be tearing their hair out with some of the defensive penalties at crucial situations.
Yeah, and it was only 2 weeks ago where a game ended similarly, albeit on a field goal, between the Jaguars and the Ravens. If you recall, there was an untimed down in that one as well, when Elvis Dumervil of the Ravens performed an exorcism-like face mask on Blake Bortles to get the Jaguars in winning position on the field goal, and they converted on the field goal. Last night, it's funny on Twitter, and you know Twitter, certainly not the most level-headed arbiter of things in the world, but it's funny how anyone who was a Lions fan, or more significantly in our case, a Lions bettor, just refused to feel as though the face mask was hit last night. And every time the face mask's hit, whether it's yanked, twisted, whatever, they're going to call hands to the face at the very least. So it's a penalty no matter what, because that face mask was hit. And so that gave the great Aaron Rodgers one more opportunity, and we saw what happened, and it's just unbelievable. Just amazing how Detroit can snatch, you know, certain franchises, they can just snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And we saw it 3 days earlier when another similarly, you know, cursed franchise in the Cleveland Browns lost on the rarest of plays, a kick six. We never see that. That simply doesn't ever happen to change an outcome on the last play of the game, and yet it did. What a turn of events in the NFL over the last week. Amazing.
That one hurt as well, Gil, because I didn't watch the game live. It was on in the early hours here in the UK. But I did have an interest in that game, and the interest was with the Cleveland Browns. So obviously got up, checked the score, and thought, they've not managed to cover. They've lost the game on the money line outright. And then obviously watching the highlights, you think, well, how did that happen? That's just a ludicrous moment in the sport.
Ludicrous. I was on the Browns as well. I was actually at my parents' house in Washington, D.C. at the time. My mother tried talking to me right after the game, having no idea what had just transpired. And I walked by her. I couldn't handle conversation for those few moments.
Let's get stuck into this week then, Gil, and we'll start with the Seattle Seahawks at the Minnesota Vikings. A 6 p.m. start time here in the UK for this one. The Seahawks are 4-5, the Vikings 21-20 on the money line, and the spread, the Seahawks -1.5 at 10-11, the Vikings +1.5 at 10-11. The points line is low, 42. The number under is 10-11, and over in the market at 10-11. There has been a little bit of line movement here, Gil. I believe this opened at a pick'em, and then the cash has come for the Seahawks.
Yeah, as you point out, a little line movement, not really anything significant in terms of crossing any key numbers, just that little tick. You know, I'm sort of consistent with that line movement. I like the Seahawks in this case. I lean Seahawks here. And I guess the first thing to really acknowledge about the Seahawks is one thing we've acknowledged before this season on this podcast, one thing we have not. The one thing we've acknowledged is that the Seahawks at 6-5, all five of those defeats were games that the Seahawks had leads in the fourth quarter during. So this is a team that could very well have a much better record than 6-5. Let's get that established first as the reigning NFC champs. The other thing we have to acknowledge, Dave, I think, is that the Seahawks defense this year is clearly not, and this is not just opinion, but by the numbers, it's clearly not the juggernaut of a team that it has been, or the defensive unit that it has been in past seasons, in the most recent past seasons, where it's been roundly feared by the rest of the NFL. And I think a lot of that has to do simply by the teams they've played and the types of offenses that they have been vulnerable to. And namely, they've played Big Ben and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Last week, Big Ben, 456 yards passing against the Seahawks, just absolutely ran right through them at Seattle. Carolina was able to do it. Greg Olsen getting exploited. Cam Newton exploiting in the inside interior of that defense. Again, these are all offenses that the Seahawks play that do a great job spreading the field and exploiting the seams. Cincinnati and Arizona, a couple other examples behind Andy Dalton and Carson Palmer. Aaron Rodgers before that. So again, five really good offensive opponents, and Seattle has succumbed in many ways to those teams. This is different. The Vikings' offense is much more straightforward than those offenses. It's Adrian Peterson behind Teddy Bridgewater. They're going to do nothing but try to run it up the gut on you. They're not going to do anything to try to trick you. You know that's the base of this offense. And Seattle's defense handles that kind of offense very well. So I think it's all in the matchup here. And Seattle only giving up 3.8 yards per rush attempt. That's seventh best in the NFL. This is a good matchup for the Seahawks on that side of the ball.
When we're talking about the matchup, Gil, you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater's name there. What do you make to his progression so far in his NFL career? Is it a case of he cannot make the throws, or the way the offense is run at the moment, they are making sure that he protects the ball at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's more of a conservative approach. I mean, look, we damn with praise. We damn with faint praise in this league when we say a guy manages the offense. That's another way of saying he really can't make the big passes or isn't accurate enough to make key long throws down the field or beyond 10, 15 yards down the field. I don't think we can make that assessment of Teddy Bridgewater yet. What I do know is that he's got the great security blanket of AP behind him. And the Vikings are very smart to rely on their bread and butter and to not ask Teddy to do more than really should rightly be expected of him this early in his career. And it's a formula that's worked really well for the Vikings. Obviously, 8-3 is beyond expectations. They've already cleared their season win total. They've already gone over. And, of course, we still have a quarter of the season plus remaining, five games remaining in the season. So I think they're doing a great job with him. I do think he will have trouble in this game, though, facing a really tough defense, even with the fact that they've tailed off in the last couple of years. This is a different kind of defense, and I think it'll be a challenge for him.
Talks about that side of the ball then, Gil. The Seattle Seahawks defense taking on Teddy Bridgewater and Adrian Peterson and the Minnesota Vikings offense. What about the Seattle Seahawks with Russell Wilson under center? Without Jimmy Graham this week, sod's law, Gil, that they find a way to integrate him into the offense, and then he goes down with an injury in last week's matchup against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It had taken them such a long time to get Graham going. Now they're going to have to revert to the offense they used without him.
Yeah, and I get the feeling that they were almost trying so hard to incorporate Graham that it was a detriment to that offense over time. And you're right, they may have finally figured a way out here as the season progressed, but it sure did take a while, and it sure seemed like they lost a little bit of their identity in doing so, did the Seahawks. And of course, they've lost Marshawn Lynch to injury as well, so that is a mitigating factor too. But They won't have Lynch. They won't have Graham, who's out for the season. I think the loss of Graham in some strange way might even help the Seahawks here, because I think Luke Wilson blocking might be a better scheme for them than Jimmy Graham trying to force the ball to Jimmy Graham all the time, if you buy into the fact that they were trying to force the ball to Jimmy Graham, because they had so much difficulty with Graham in the red zone for most of this season. So I don't think that that's as big of a ding, if you will, a big of a knock on the Seahawks as most people, as the narrative will suggest this week. Russell Wilson really came alive last week. Amazing game for him. Maybe the best single game of Russell Wilson's career. He stayed in the pocket a lot and did damage from the pocket. Not that we don't expect and don't want Russell Wilson as Seahawks backers to scramble and make stuff happen. He will absolutely do that. But I think there's some merit to the fact that he did stay in the pocket more than normal, did a lot of damage to the Steelers' pass defense. Now, I know the Steelers' pass defense is vulnerable, but I think that's a good sign for the Seahawks. And I like their ability here to be effective. I think Wilson has proven himself this year to make use of his wideouts much more than last season. So I think there's a positive trend with the Seahawks offense as well.
Just before we wrap on this game, Gil, you mentioned that Ben Roethlisberger had been able to throw on the Seattle Seahawks for, I think it was a record, wasn't it, against the Seahawks in a single game last week.
Yes.
What did you make to Mike Tomlin's decision not to go for that fourth down, not to go for the touchdown on fourth down and kick the field goal to make it a two-point game?
I talked about this on my Monday podcast a little, that even I, as a football watcher, am a little hypocritical, because when a similar situation occurred a few weeks earlier, when the Falcons did basically the same thing at San Francisco, they were down by more than a field goal. Mike Quinn opted to kick a field goal, and then Atlanta couldn't subsequently stop Blaine Gabbert and the San Francisco 49ers. And I remember at that moment screaming at Mike Quinn, like, what are you doing? Your defense isn't good enough to do this. It's funny how with the Steelers at that moment, I was perfectly fine from the four-yard line with them kicking the field goal at that moment. So I have to ask myself, why am I inconsistent in it as well? Now, I don't know what the good answer is other than to say something about it being from the four-yard line and that not being from the two, meaning it's much more difficult to get in at the end zone, and you lose the option, in essence, of running the football from the four. They know you're going to pass at that point. So I think that's sort of what's happening in my brain, and that's why I was okay with the field goal, and there was enough time for the Steelers to potentially, anyway, get the subsequent stop. But what we learned later, though, Dave, is that Big Ben had concussive symptoms, at least according to the Steelers he did, maybe not according to Big Ben. And so if that played into the decision-making, it also makes, in retrospect, a lot of sense as to why they might kick the field goal there. So I guess all of that to say, I didn't have a problem with it at the time, so I'm certainly not going to be an armchair quarterback and act like I'm outraged about it.
Okay, Seattle Seahawks at the Minnesota Vikings. Gil going with the Seattle Seahawks minus 1.5 at 10-11. Sunday, 9:25 p.m. UK time, Carolina Panthers at the New Orleans Saints. This is an NFC South divisional clash, and the Panthers 5-16 on the money line. The Saints are 13-5. The spread here is set at 7, Gil, minus 7. The Panthers reduced juice at even money. The Saints plus 7 at 5-6, and the total points line is set at 50 here. Under is 10-11. The over is 10-11. And Carolina, Gil, now standing as the sole undefeated team in the National Football League after New England were beaten by Denver last week. They could have hardly been more impressive last weekend, the Carolina Panthers beating Dallas. The last 12 months of this franchise, Gil, has been astonishing. To go from 3-8-1 to win 15 straight regular season matches, it's nothing short of a miracle, really.
It is nothing short of a miracle, and it's almost minimized in what you said, because prior to this 15-game regular season winning streak, they were 0-6-1 in the previous 7 games. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's a ridiculous turnaround. And if they win this game, 16 in a row would be the longest winning streak, regular season winning streak, for any NFC team since the merger of 1970, since the NFL and AFL merger, merged. In other words, since the NFC ever existed. So to think that this Carolina Panthers team, a team that, and I raised my hand as well, a team that we, before the season started, said, well, they don't have Kelvin Benjamin, they don't have Steve Smith, who is Cam Newton going to feed the ball to on the outside? And yet they just win and win and win. And I think they'll win here too, but I will tell you that against the spread here, the 7-point spread, this is the last game that I cut from my Super Contest pick. So this was about my sixth in terms of the strength, or sixth or seventh in terms of my strength and my lean. I lean Carolina, but there's something about this number that bothers me enough where I'm ultimately just keeping it as a lean and not a play.
Okay, Gil. To what do you attribute Carolina's success then in the last 12 months? Is it to Cam Newton?
Pretty much. I mean, look, the defense has been great all along. The defense really carried Cam Newton in those first eight games. And when I say carried, perhaps I'm putting in quotes, but by the numbers, and this is according to both passer rating and total QBR, the two most quoted quarterback statistics, Cam Newton, through the first 8 weeks of the season, Dave, ranked only 27th in total QBR. He was behind, just to give you a perspective on that, he was behind Colin Kaepernick in both QBR and passer rating to that point in the season, and yet the Panthers were 8-0. So, again, do you buy into those numbers? Do you not? Certainly at that point in the season, you would be justified in questioning the real veracity of those stats. But from week nine, since week nine until now, and this comes again from the great Mike Sando over at ESPN, since week nine, Cam leads the NFL in total QBR. So the turnaround that we just described for the Panthers from last year to this season, well, in season this year, it's applied to Cam Newton. He's gone from really towards the bottom of the league to the best, statistically speaking. By the way, over that same span, since week nine, he's tied for the lead with 9 touchdown passes. So really, while the defense carried him early, he has carried his weight since week eight. So it's just a formula that is working. There's real no weakness on this football team.
And I don't think you can understate the fact that, you mentioned it there, Cam Newton's carrying the offense, but they've got a talisman on the defense as well in Luke Kuechly, and to have those two working together on opposite sides of the ball, I think you talked about intangibles earlier. I think you've got two leaders on the offense and the defense there.
We absolutely do, and the use of the word talisman is why I do this show, Dave, because I am going to steal that and I'm going to use it on mine liberally in the future. Yeah, Luke Kuechly is a game changer on defense. He's one of these guys, you know, we play fantasy football in the U.S., as I'm sure you do over there in the U.K. as well, in all kinds of sports. But one of the staples of fantasy football in the U.S. is that about, I would guess, I'm just making this up, but I'm going to say 4 out of 5 leagues just play team defenses. So most casual NFL fans aren't really aware of individual defensive players unless they're big stars like Darrell Revis, let's say, or someone of that ilk. Well, Luke Kuechly is now one of those guys that even the casual fan knows about. He was famously part of a play against the Patriots here in the last, I believe it was last season, where the Panthers won on a controversial play in the end zone. Kuechly was involved in that. But he is a consistent performer week after week after week. He's a ball hawker. When Carolina is forcing turnovers, oftentimes it is Kuechly who is responsible for it and right in the thick of it. He's a game changer, and you're right. They have a pillar on offense. They have a pillar on defense. And let's not forget Josh Norman for the Panthers on that defense as well. This is a young cornerback for the Panthers who, by advanced stats, has been the best cornerback in the National Football League this season. Josh Norman, a guy that pretty much no one could have named before this season unless they were a diehard Panthers fan or a real NFL aficionado. Norman is going to go up against Brandon Cooks, the speedy Saints receiver in this game. It's a really interesting matchup to watch, and I think Norman will once again prove his mettle.
We've talked primarily about the Carolina Panthers during this preview, Gil, and rightly so, because they are the team that are 11-0 at the moment and going for the NFC South. The New Orleans Saints, how do they go about scoring points on the Panthers in this matchup, given that last weekend they only managed 6 against the Houston Texans. And this offense that we've in recent years considered dynamic look a little bit labored now.
Yeah, and you know, I spoke on my show yesterday about home-road splits. Now, typically in American sports, we talk about home-road splits in baseball. And simply, a home-road split suggests a performance of a team or a player based on the venue. At home, they perform one way. On the road, they perform sometimes an entirely different way. Mm. The NFL this season, home-road splits, for whatever reason, come up all the time. I don't remember ever in previous seasons talking about home-road splits that often. And there's so many examples of it this year. The Redskins, which we'll talk about soon, so good at home, so poor on the road. There's numerous examples of it. Arizona, so good at home, very shaky on the road. Well, in San Francisco, bad at home, really bad on the road. You know, we go on and on. But with the Saints, while they're not as, you know, dominant as they once were at the Superdome in New Orleans, they're still very good, or they're still very capable of scoring points at home. I don't know what it is about the friendly confines of their stadium, but they're still able to do it. So on the one hand, we can look at this Panthers defense and say, oh boy, how are the Saints going to tackle them, or how are the Saints going to overcome that? But I do think the Saints will figure out a way to score some points in that environment. They just always seem to, even if it means defeat. And that's where the seven-point spread comes into play, Dave. Will the Saints be able to do enough to stay within that window? I have a sneaking suspicion that they might. Of course, I'll feel real stupid if Carolina blows them out of the stadium, and I'll knock myself for just being ridiculous in overanalysis, but I just have a hunch about the Saints doing so. The real issue, I think, might be, you know, and let's highlight what we just talked about with Josh Norman and that Panthers defense. Number one are the Panthers in yards per pass attempt allowed, just allowing 5.5 per play this year, per attempt this season. So that is what Drew Brees is up against, statistically speaking. The other side of that ball, the other side of that ball, just because it comes up, New Orleans, dead last yards per play allowed, 6.6. Dead last defensive expected points allowed, dead last in yards per pass attempt allowed at 8.3. So, I mean, that's really the side that concerns Saints backers and fans.
Yes, I was just going to say, Gil, that I suppose a lot of people that are leaning towards the Saints here will maybe pinpoint their meeting earlier on in the season when the New Orleans Saints had Luke McCown in the center and still managed to put up 22 points. They will cling to that with Drew Brees back now.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, that's a very simple point. It's sort of like, you know, well, if Luke McCown can do that, why couldn't Drew Brees do that and more? And if you're going to score more than 22 points, are the Panthers really going to drop, you know, 35 or 40 on you? Yeah. Well, very well they might. You know, I can't sit here and tell you against that defense that they might not. But I guess some improvement with Dennis Allen as the Saints defensive coordinator. I mean, we have a one-game sample size, right? Rob Ryan out, Dennis Allen in. Houston Texans put up 14 very quick points on the Saints defense last week, and you had to imagine Rob Ryan doing jumping jacks and getting all excited in his living room. But then the Texans only scored 10 the rest of the way. So not that the Texans are an offensive juggernaut, but I guess that's something for the Saints to hang their hat on defensively going into this one.
I never want to have that mental image of Rob Ryan doing jumping jacks in my head again,
sorry,
either, Gil.
Sorry.
Thank you for that. Let's move on to prime time then, Gil. A couple of games prime time as per usual. We've got the Indianapolis Colts at the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is the early hours of Monday morning here in the UK, 1:30 a.m. start time. This one on the money line, the Colts are 5-2, the Steelers 1-3, and this spread is set at 7 here. The Colts plus 7, 20-23. The Steelers minus 7, 20-21. Both these franchises 6-5 at the moment, with Indianapolis top of the AFC South and Pittsburgh second behind the Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC North. And it's strange how things work out sometimes, Gil, because at the start of the season, everyone was talking about Andrew Luck being the key to Indianapolis' success. But they're riding the arm of a 40-year-old veteran quarterback in Matt Hasselbeck in Indianapolis at the moment. And it's working out well currently, Gil.
It's working out well, but I think this is where that train stops.
I agree.
Matt Hasselbeck, Yeah, Matt Hasselbeck, 40 years old, as you say. I mean, give him credit. The Colts are 4-0 with him starting this season. Andrew Luck, when he was playing and starting for the Colts, they were just 2-5. You know, Andrew Luck with the shoulder injury, the rib fracture, the lacerated kidney, the torn abdominal muscle, you name the injury. But the key to that is that Hasselbeck has faced teams with a combined 477 win percentage, while Luck's opponents had a 610 win percentage. So, you know, that matters as well. There's a reason, you know, give credit where it's due. Way to go, Matt Hasselbeck. But now you're playing a team that's a lot better than the ones you've faced. And I think this is where, you know, things change. Another really informative stat, or a stat that informs why Hasselbeck has been more successful than Luck: Colts opponents have scored 7 points off 5 turnovers and starts by Hasselbeck this season. They scored 61 off 17 turnovers in Andrew Luck starts. So yes, Andrew Luck turning the ball over way more than Matt Hasselbeck. But on the other hand, Colts opponents versus Hasselbeck, they have not been able to capitalize on the turnovers that he has committed, or that the Colts have committed while he's been behind center. And that's something that you can't project, you cannot project moving forward. So I think a little bit of that good fortune will run out here.
I see this total points line has just moved. I was making notes for this game earlier, Gil, and it was set at 48. It's gone up to 49 now. The under is 10-11, the over 10-11. I can just see a ton of points here, Gil, in this matchup from a personal perspective.
Well, that's the thing with the Steelers. You know, we saw a bit of that last week. Big Ben, 456 yards passing against the Seahawks, as we said. Now, the big assumption, let's start off the bat here, Dave, by saying I'm going to assume, and you know what they say about assuming, that Big Ben is going to play here. So yeah. everything here is predicated on the fact that Big Ben plays. And if you followed it this week, Big Ben says he has no idea he had a concussion. The Steelers say he did have a concussion. Either way, he's passed concussion protocol, and he's acting, as we do this podcast here, about 48 hours, little more than 48 hours before game time, that he will play. So, yes, the Steelers are an offensive juggernaut with Big Ben this season. That cannot be emphasized enough. And the difference, the drop-off from Big Ben down to either Landry Jones or Michael Vick can be quantified. The Steelers, with Big Ben on the field, they pass 69% of the time. 69% of plays when Ben is on the field, they pass. That's the highest rate of his career. 63% was his previous high. And despite that, he ranks third in total QBR. I get this again from Mike Sando over at ESPN. Third in total QBR at 72.8 this season. So he's never passed more, and he's really, really performing at an elite level. 72.8 is his total QBR. If you take Landry Jones and Michael Vick and combine them into a total QBR score, they're at 33.3, which suggests that they'd only win one out of every three games, pretty much. But with Big Ben, it's an elite-level performer, and, you know, they lead. The reason for them leading the NFL in yards per play on offense at 6.4 yards per play is directly on the shoulders of Big Ben Roethlisberger. He's been fabulous. Antonio Brown is an amazing weapon. And D'Angelo Williams has stepped in fabulously for Le'Veon Bell. That Steelers offense is capable of dropping 40 any time out on the football field.
They are indeed. I'm with you here. You're going with the Steelers then, Gil, I take it here.
I am going with the Steelers. To your point about how this could be a shootout, I do think that the Colts will try to pass and pass often against the Steelers' pass defense. We talked a little bit about how Russell Wilson exploited the Steelers' pass defense last week, but the truth is that the Steelers' run defense is pretty good, and that the Colts' running game is virtually non-existent. They're generating nothing on the ground. So, yes, to your point, I think the Colts are going to try to make it into a shootout, for lack of a better option, and they will not be able, in my opinion, to keep up with the Steelers.
No, I agree. I can see a lot of points. I can see the Steelers winning. You mentioned D'Angelo Williams and Antonio Brown as weapons. Marcus Wheaton had a breakout game last week against the Seattle Seahawks, and Martavis Bryant, an exceptional receiver as well. They just have some weapons. I wonder whether, thinking ahead here, Gil, for an anti-post wager or futures bet, the Pittsburgh Steelers 25-1 to win the Super Bowl. I was wondering whether that's got any chance?
Well, of course it has some chance. I guess the issue with the Steelers is that, unlike the Colts, who even at 6-5 can still rely on winning their division if they can get past the Texans and squeak in that way and then get to play in the postseason, the Steelers really realistically have no shot of winning their division.
No.
3 games behind the Bengals with 5 to play. So their real fight is with a mess of teams, just a bunch of teams in the AFC to get in as a wild card. Now, that's the key to me. If they get in, they are, I would agree with you, one of those teams that you just don't want to face. There are always those couple or few teams that are the proverbial, that's a team I don't want to see in the playoffs. And I think the Seahawks, for instance, are one of those teams. And the Steelers in the AFC would be one of those, too. I don't think anybody in their right mind want to play that offense because there's always, as we like to say in boxing, there's always a puncher's chance with the Steelers.
Absolutely, absolutely. One final point. I will move on to the Monday Night Football game very shortly. The whole situation regarding Ben Roethlisberger and did he have a concussion or not, I got the feeling as a viewer that if that game had still been in the balance, Roethlisberger might have come back out, Gil, and that's the grey area there.
It is, and it's, you know, look, the NFL, even as recently as a few years ago, we weren't talking about concussions. But it really came to light when all these old retired NFL players were experiencing horrific health issues years after their days in the NFL, and horrific even to the point where not only was there rampant CTE discovery in their brains, which is a shorthand medical term for a whole bunch of brain damage that really leads to depression in many cases and suicide in others. And that's not even talking about the injuries to your limbs and what the effect on the human body for playing football all those years. But concussions really came to the fore because of that. Junior Seau, most famously committing suicide with post-concussive repercussions from his NFL career, but there are other examples of it. And so the NFL became very vigilant, really because they had to. I mean, let's be honest here, Dave. Had there not been this explosion of publicity about all of this and really justified complaining about this, they probably wouldn't have done a darn thing. But because they are forced to, they have to address and they have to, you know, take a stance that they are now extremely careful with their players. And if you have any symptoms of a concussion, you must leave the football game. Now, of course, at the same time, they want to expand to an 18-game regular season. So they're completely hypocritical. And we can go on about that for an hour. But yes, that's the issue. Big Ben, it's up to the player on the one hand to say, hey, I don't feel right. You won't get a lot of players who will do that for many reasons. A, competitiveness. B, fear of their job, let's say, if it's a lesser-tier player. They want to stay in the game. But then it's up to the team doctor to also make that assessment. So it is a tough thing to do mid-game, and maybe you're right. I mean, we'll never know, right?
No.
The Steelers, you know, at that point, the Steelers were still in the game, right? They kicked the field goal. They're still in that football game, but the Seahawks do come down and score subsequently. So we'll never know if that decision was partially, you know, somewhat based on the fact that the assessment was made that they couldn't win that game. It is a tough thing for the NFL, and it's just a tough league physically for these players. And I don't think we'll ever solve the concussion thing. It's just part of the game.
That was just me speculating, Gil. Yeah, I agree with you as far as the matchup's concerned. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's going to be tough for that Colts side to keep up with the Steelers and that offense in that matchup. We'll finish, Gil, with the Dallas Cowboys at the Washington Redskins Monday Night Football. And the Dallas Cowboys are 9-5, the Washington Redskins 5-11 on the money line. The spread is set at 4.5 here. The Cowboys plus 4.5 at 10-11. The Redskins minus 4.5 at 10-11. We talked about it intermittently last week on the podcast, Gil. The NFC East, a bit of a mess at the moment. And the reason Dallas aren't placing Tony Romo on season-ending injured reserve after he re-injured that collarbone last week is that they still have a slim hope of winning the division. That hope can be extinguished this weekend, though, against the Washington Redskins, Gil.
Mm-hmm. You said it. the worst division in football, the Redskins with a share, or I guess technically tiebreaker, they would win it if the playoffs were to start tomorrow. The Redskins at 5-6 atop the NFC East, and the Cowboys just two games back at 3-8. Imagine you're 3-8 and you still technically have a shot at this mathematically. But this is very simple. No Tony Romo for the Cowboys, again, fracturing the same collarbone that had already sidelined him for seven games. And we're getting more Matt Castle here. Matt Castle, who was 0-4. You know, he and Brandon Weeden combined 0-7 when they were behind center for the Cowboys this year. But Castle was 0-4. He only threw for 809 yards in those four losses. And on the other side, we talked about home-road splits, Dave. Kirk Cousins at home, what a revelation. Kirk Cousins on the road, he's Kirk Cousins. But at home, 10 touchdown passes. This is during the Redskins' five-game home winning streak. 10 touchdown passes, zero picks, 121.2 passer rating, 76% completion rate. On the road, five touchdowns, eight picks, 69.8 rating. So he's a much different player on the road. But the key for the Redskins is that Cousins has been sacked only 11 times this season. Home or road, altogether, 11 times. When you get that kind of protection, you are going to beat a lot of football teams. Even a young quarterback like Cousins, when given time, will be able to exploit opposing defenses. Now, here's the deal, though. A lot of those road games, and a lot of the reason that those inform bad road stats for Cousins, they played really good competition. They played the Falcons, the Jets, Patriots, and Panthers on the road. So, you know, those home road splits make sense when the schedule is like that on the road. You're getting a Cowboys team that can pressure the quarterback. Greg Hardy is an amazing player. Forget for a moment and your judgments of him off the field, and we all do have judgments about that. But on the field, there's no question that he is a disruptive force. And the extent to which the Redskins can hold him in check is going to go a long way towards figuring out if they can cover this spread or not, or winning this football game to begin with.
Yeah, when I was breaking it down, that looked key to me. Greg Hardy, whether or not he can get pressure on Kirk Cousins in this matchup. And you mentioned Brandon Weeden and Matt Castle combining for that 0-7 record when Romo hasn't been fit, Gil. They are the opposite of the two-headed monster, aren't they? Whatever the opposite is, that's what you've got with Brandon Weeden and Matt Castle. And going back to the Redskins for a second as well, they've finished last in six of the past seven seasons in this division. Have they got any better, or have the teams that are in the division got worse?
I think the Redskins have gotten a little better this year. Yeah, I think it's fair to say they've gotten a little better, and they certainly seem to have the energy and the positivity of a team that is a little different. But I think it's more the latter. I think it's more that the other teams aren't nearly as good, if I'm to be honest. Yes, the Redskins have some improvement, but the Eagles are a shell of what they have been under Chip Kelly the first couple seasons. And the reason for that is that Chip Kelly felt the need to trade all their stars away inexplicably. And so they're 4-7, just one game out. The Cowboys, clearly because of the Romo injury, we can trace it directly to that. That's why they're not as good. And in the case of the Giants, you know, the Giants, I still think the Giants are going to win this division, but they're so schizophrenic. You just have absolutely no idea what you're getting with that football team from week to week. Oh, you almost beat the Patriots? You should have beaten the Patriots? And then they come back and they lay an egg against the Redskins. So that is the answer to me. It's that the rest of the division has regressed. Sure, the Redskins have certainly displayed a tick upwards, but as long as Kirk Cousins still has the propensity to throw interceptions, the Redskins are always going to be stunted. And a lot of people are like, what are you talking about? You just had all these great stats about Kirk Cousins at home performing so well. Even in victory last week, there was a play in the first quarter where a sure pick six was dropped by the Giants. And then on the game-clinching drive, what turned out to be the game-clinching drive for the Redskins, Cousins was pressured, threw the ball up randomly in the air for anybody to have come down with it. He was fortunate that they got bailed out with a roughing call. So even in victory, we tend to forget those moments. Cousins is very loose with the ball, and for those who would then counter and say, yeah, but if you put all his starts together, he's only really played 1 year in the NFL, let's just stop with that for a second. This is his fourth season in the NFL. When you are even present for that long, you've either got that stuff figured out or not. So Cousins has just got to protect the ball. And look, in their five wins, zero picks from Kirk Cousins. In their six losses, at least one pick. It means everything to this football team. He's got to protect the football.
And it's a prime example of variance, isn't it, as well, Gil? Anyone can produce for a short amount of time. It's doing it over the long periods, which proves a quarterback's... I don't even want to use the word greatness here, Gil, but it proves that the quarterback can be productive at this level.
It's 100% right, and it's 100% right even as bettors, right? You know, any one of us can have a good week, a good couple weeks, but it really is about the long term. And we still don't know. You know, the jury's still out on Kirk Cousins. The Redskins are really deciding right now, do we commit to this guy long term? Do we not? Well, these last five games of the season are going to determine a lot of that. And by the way, I said this on my show earlier in the week, if I said to you, Dave, I want you to make a schedule the last five games of the season for the Redskins. I don't want you to make it too hard. I don't want you to make it too easy. I want you to make the perfect schedule that would be a fair barometer, in your opinion, as to what they could overcome justifiably, and you'd feel great about them making the playoffs if they could overcome those five games, or if they fail to make the playoffs having played those five games, that you'll say to yourself, you know what, they didn't deserve it because they couldn't overcome that five-game schedule. That is, in fact, in my opinion, the exact schedule they have. Two games against Dallas, one at Philly, one at Chicago, and one home game against Buffalo. It's a perfect quintet of games to determine what this team is really made of.
And just before we wrap, Gil, worth mentioning Dallas last in the NFL turnover margin, minus 12. They've only forced 7 turnovers. You've mentioned on the podcast that turnovers change games and in the National Football League, and that's been detrimental to Dallas's chances, as well as Romo being hurt throughout the season as well.
It has been, no question. I mean, really, if you had one headline outside of Romo's injury, that's it, right? Dallas, minus 12. And really, it's because they just can't generate an interception. They've not had fumble luck, and recovering fumbles is all luck. But here's Kirk Cousins. Here's your chance. You know, if you're going to pick off anybody, this might be your guy. But it all starts on that front line. Can the Dallas front behind Greg Hardy pressure Kirk Cousins? That's where this game will be won or lost. And I think the same can be said on the other side of the ball, in the trenches. Will that Dallas offensive line be able to push back that Redskins run defense, which has not been very good? I would not touch this game. I had guys on my show who were all about Washington early in the week, and maybe it's the defeatist Redskin fan in me, maybe it's 25 years of futility, but I'm not rushing to play the Redskins here, giving 4.5. If anything, I would lean Cowboys getting those points, and in doing so with that lean, I would take a big gulp and then close my eyes and see what happens afterwards.
Okay, Gil, thank you. We've been through the four matches that are televised here in the UK. Your five best bets for this weekend, Gil?
Five best bets. Let's talk about the ones we already had. Pittsburgh, that we talked about extensively, that's one of them, giving 7 at home against the Colts for all the reasons that we stated. And Seattle as well, pick number 2 at Minnesota, giving a point there at the Vikings. I like Seattle in this matchup. The other three, I'm going with the Houston Texans again. They served us very well last week at home against the Saints. That defense is just playing so well. I was able to get them at 3.5. It's still at, I think it's at 3
now. It is, yes.
And I'd still play Houston at 3. I certainly love the 3.5 more. But that Houston defense is excellent. The only thing you got to worry about, can Brian Hoyer and the Texans offense generate enough points to keep up? It really comes down to the Houston defense, how well they can keep Buffalo's offense in check. But you're giving me 3 or 3.5, I'm taking the Texans. And the Chicago Bears, pick number 4, Chicago giving 7 at home against the Niners. I love the Bears here. The Niners are so bad on the road. They've been outscored 176-71 on the road. This is one of those teams that are 3-8. It's one thing to play at home. When they travel, it just seems like they don't feel like playing. I love the Bears, who are playing great football, giving all those points. And then my fifth pick, you know, call it boring, call it unsexy, but I'm taking the New England Patriots, Dave, giving 9.5 against the Eagles. I know there's no Rob Gronkowski, and that does mean a lot. That is the tipping point. That's the one injury besides Tom Brady that they can't afford to have. But the Eagles are such a disaster. And 9.5 points over the course of a game, I just like Bill Belichick and Brady over Chip Kelly and his depleted, self-imposed, depleted team. I'll take the Patriots. They figure out a way, and I like them as my fifth pick.
Superb. Always a pleasure to chat to you on a Friday afternoon here in the UK, Gil. Enjoy the NFL action this weekend. And remember, if you want to check out any of Gil's podcasts, they're all available on Twitter. If you follow Gil at Beating the Book, you can follow myself at D. Kellner. And thank you, folks, for listening to the podcast. Thank you, Gil, for your company this morning.
Dave, as always, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to the podcast. Make sure you check this out via audioboom.com by typing in William Hill, or on iTunes also by typing in William Hill, and subscribing. For myself and Gil, enjoy the action week number 13, and we'll speak again soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.